he just said was just an emotional reaction. Oh, we didn't have our little time to be able to keep our control on the streets and do what we wanted to do. And you have been so bothersome. Well, you have to be bothersome. You know, you have a right. And I think that it's going to be typical of protesting. You know, it's just going to happen that you're going to be a little bit irritating. You are actually quite calm for somebody who's as emotional as we all are about what's going on. And I back you up totally on what you've been doing, because you're doing it in as best civic way as you can. You're caring about the people, and nobody is saying, oh yeah, this is a disaster. We should be calling Bush down here to pay for the things that are going on here. This is a disaster situation nobody's even considering.
Exactly. Caller, what's your first name?
Valerie.
Hey, Valerie, I appreciate you're raising that. But as I said to Bob, you know, we could have been, and perhaps should have been, because, you know, you are suggesting, and you are properly suggesting, this is a life-threatening crisis people are in,
yes,
as well as a human rights-threatening crisis, which is always abusive when poor people are being treated like this habitually. But, you know, we did not engage in the kind of massive civil disobedience and peaceful massive civil disobedience, which we have in the past. So the idea, I mean, Bob is just simply in error factually about this. I mean, I agree with you. I think we probably should have gone further, you know. But in fact, it shows you how supremely confident the city council is of getting the kind of reaction that Bob gave us,
mm-hmm,
of, you know, kind of knee-jerk support and assuming that somehow I was pushing the envelope or being disruptive. I mean, I'm pretty careful about being disruptive. I do, you know, we have done, technically disruptive behavior.
Yeah, and that was the past, which they are feeling intimidated by, what you've done in the past.
Right.
You know?
We haven't done it recently. I mean, perhaps to our shame, we haven't done it recently.
Right.
And this incident was not an example of it. That's what is so peculiar to me, and that's what, I mean, I'm putting it out as a kind of a clarification, but I'm not trying to say one should not be disruptive. I'm not trying to say one, you know, that you have to be disruptive. I mean, how are we going to stop the Iraqi war?
Exactly.
You know, by sitting quietly in the background and moving to the protest pits and pens that Bush wants us to move to?
Exactly.
I think not.
Exactly, and there's a lot of people who listen to this show who back you up in this thought and back me up in what I'm saying. I'm sure I'm speaking for many people. So, you know, he can speak that, and he's speaking for many people. And I have respect for the fact that he wants his organization, but he needs to consider the fact that we are in a disaster situation here. This is a really important thing that no one is issuing even an iota. And we're the only ones doing it. And this is really teeny. And I'm saying we. I'm sorry, because I'm really not involved. I'm just getting involved mentally right now. And that's nothing compared to what you guys are doing.
Well, if folks want to get involved, I invite you to come to the next Huff meeting, which is at the ungodly hour of 8:30 in the morning in Baker Square at 1107 Ocean Street downtown on Wednesday.
Okay.
Or if you can't do that, give an email to rnorse2@hotmail.com or give a call to the Huff line at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom.
Great.
Valerie, thank you for calling. Anything you,
yes,
want to conclude with?
That's it, except that I just want you to know that you deserve a hug.
Oh, hey, I'll take one. If you see me, grab me.
Okay.
Thanks.
You take care now.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And you can send those hugs in or criticisms as well to 96.3 FM. 427-3772 is the call-in number. We're also broadcasting at 101.1 FM. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, Robert.
Hi.
Hey, just want to make a statement. I thought it was highly interesting to hear those tapes of Mr. Kennedy, and to add just, I mean, it may not be anything completely new from what the other caller said, but it's important not to even accept, like, there's this implicit assumption of disruption being bad, you know, like a radical tactic then isn't appropriate, where he was obviously being extremely autocratic and oppressive and just gnarly, man. He even made this little comment, like, I don't want to be too autocratic. That was so psychoanalytically revealing. Nobody else mentioned the word autocratic. It came right to his head. Why? Because he's totally looking that way. And also, I'm deeply offended by anyone telling me not to cuss at any juncture. I don't need to be told that, you know? There are certain places where I choose not to cuss because it's inappropriate to my mind. I don't ever, ever want to be told that by anybody. And I just naturally, I will always rebel against that. And if I go ever went in front of that stupid council, which I'm really not that moved to do, because it seems like a fucking waste of time on some levels,
yeah.
But, you know, just because of them, not because of you, I would want to cuss. It would make me want to cuss at them and use as much profane language as I could to express my opinion, just because I were forbidden to.
Caller, give us your first name here.
This is Matthew, Technical Difficulties.
Hey, Matthew, you also have your own show on Free Radio.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, in fact, we're going to be later tonight.
Maybe you can bring in Scott Kennedy to do a little mutual cussing back and forth.
I know. No, I'd like to talk to this guy because it is. I think it's really important that you play these tapes because even with your commentary just seems to be clarifying what's really what seems to be on the tape.
Yeah, I'm trying to be accurate. Hey, thank you.
I know. Oh, thank you, Robert. Keep it up.
All right, Matthew.
Bye.
I also want to point out that if you read the email that Scott Kennedy sent out, which is going to be posted on the internet, and also hear his speech, which he just made, he states that you can appeal, an individual member of the public can appeal the ruling of the mayor. I tried to do that. His response was, turn off the mics, turn off the television, evict Mr. Norse. Remove Mr. Norse from the chamber. So he violated his own rules of decorum. This seems to be much more a dangerous situation than one member of the public having a whispered conversation with somebody else, which is not disruptive. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert.
Hey, Bernard.
Can you hear me?
I can, and we're talking with...
Bernard Kutzner.
Hey, Bernard.
Hi. I wanted to, speak to Bob. I wanted to just, respond to what he said before.
Please do.
Thank you. I'm on radio. Just telling my son. Bob, I hear your anger, at Robert. Well, Robert isn't the problem. Robert didn't cause the sleeping ban. The sleeping ban is the main focus here. And thousands of citizens, have asked the consul, let's put the sleeping ban on the agenda, and that hasn't happened. And so as a result, we have to have, some kind of, we have to go at them more directly. And even though you don't like Robert's style, sometimes I don't neither. But the point is, if you don't like Robert's style, I'd like to see you, talk against the sleeping ban and organize your own, a way of reaching the consul on the agenda. But just for you to constantly attack Robert because you don't like his style, I don't think really gets you very far.
Bernard, I want to point out to the community that you were actually the key person responsible for actually engaging the One Dance Summit folks, which included Michael Parenti, Mickey Z, and other nationally known writers and speakers and political activists to come down to the city council, speak at the press conference, and then briefly spend some time in council chambers before they were warned. Kennedy had this kind of sarcastic undertone that... indicating that the people he didn't recognize in the demonstration must be from out of town, kind of the out-of-town activists. I don't know if you ever noticed that little twist in what he had to say. But you have been, you were instrumental in getting this to happen, and I think you were looking for somewhat more serious civil disobedience of a fashion that would, maybe draw national media attention and, kind of stimulate homeless people to feel that they're, for example, taking over an area, an abandoned building, so people could actually have a shelter for the night. Maybe occupying city council offices in some way so that there would be no business as usual. And indeed, you yourself engaged in a somewhat more high-profile but not illegal lobbying effort at city council at city council offices back in 2000 and 2001, the city council coffee clutch, where you served hot coffee to homeless people and invited homeless people to come in and talk to the then-mayor Fitzmaurice and ask him to do something about the sleeping ban over the winter. That resulted in your being banned from city council offices for 6 months until the court finally recognized that the injunction that was gotten by Fitzmaurice had no merit. That was then our mayor. So you've been involved in these kinds of high protest actions before. I you know, this was, to me, just a mellow kind of pretty low-key protest until Kennedy escalated this whole thing and put it into the public consciousness.
Right.
And it's not just about the sleeping ban. This is about abuse of power. Kennedy has taken, you know, I'm critical of Kennedy for a number of reasons around police, unquestioning support for the police department on almost every issue you can name, his destruction of the Citizens Police Review Board, his torpedoing of social services in favor of higher and continued police budgets. What's important for the community is not just this one homeless issue. That is certainly an important issue, and that's the reason we were there. But if we can be crushed on this issue, then anybody can be treated this way. Although I also add that the way he treated us, because we're such a marginalized group here, was kind of like kicking a dog. In other words, I don't think he would try to do this with the De Anza seniors.
No. Let me tell you that.
They could, you know, recall him. And they should, of course.
Yeah, but let me just draw a comparison to you. I'm going to take off from what you just said, the De Anza. Like, Bob, I don't know if you were there, you know, at the De Anza hearings. Well, I was there, and the people there, we made much disruption. We made lots of noise. There was not one person kicked out of there, not even one little warning. So I really would like you to rethink your position, Bob, and maybe, like, you know, you don't have to organize with Robert. You know, you could organize on your own. You know, if you think you have a better way of reaching these nice liberals, I mean, go for it.
Well, thank you, Bernard.
Thank you very much, Robert. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, and I don't expect Bob to change his view. He has a right to his view. He's going to probably keep his view, as Kennedy will probably keep his view. The question is, do we want people in positions of political power who are going to use that political power capriciously and arbitrarily to eliminate political discourse? And I think, to me, the answer is really simply no. And how do we get rid of them? Hi, you're on Free Radio. Hello, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert. How are you doing?
Good. Who's this?
Doug.
Hey, Doug. You're the infamous person who had me kicked out of city council.
Yeah, I asked him. I told him it really wasn't my fault and that I thought they were being selective. I didn't even think anyone, you know.
Let me explain.
It had a mere disruption.
Doug, let me explain that you were the person that Channel 46 News wanted me to go ask to come outside and speak because you have been homeless. In fact, you live in your vehicle now, right?
Right, right.
And I went in. Did I come in shouting at you, hey, come on outside, and in a voice that would disrupt the council meeting?
No, you weren't doing anything unusual to me. The person sitting in front of me that was putting in the 310-square-foot SROs, 310-square-foot. You almost have that much room in my van.
That's
got to charge $1,500 for them and call that.
That's the agenda.
That's why there's
Doug,
46 people dying in the streets of this town.
Doug, that's the agenda item that was being discussed. I think you were saying that somebody in front of you was actually talking in a louder voice than I was, and right. I wasn't talking. Was I not whispering to you?
Right, you were whispering to me, and I actually overheard the man. He said, you know, and he was right. He said, you know, the guy was trying to sell him his family units and they were 310 square feet anyway. People really know.
Doug, what you're referring to, as I understand it, is a kind of a caustic conversation that happened between Ed Davidson and the guy who was speaking on the agenda item 114, who had been speaking on, who was then in the audience.
I wasn't going to say his name.
Right. My conversation to you, or my exchange to you, was it not a whispered, they want you outside, and pretty much
right.
Amounted to that?
It was all a whisper. No one was even making any noise, walking with the signs. They were going to do everything real quietly and you know, very cordially. And it was the city council. Oh, and it was like, you know, like a couple of people pointed out already, the people that were speaking weren't interrupted. In fact, they were going along with the flow.
But wait a minute, Doug. They were interrupted. They were interrupted by Mayor Kennedy, intent on eliminating some people from the public discourse, myself to start with.
And people also, they that are just listening and weren't there, you know, they think about your past and such like that also. But in the past of other city council meetings, I like the way he said on the thing, what did he say about the some kind of great democracy we have here in town. You turn off the TV and arrest people. Isn't that what Kennedy said on the tape?
Yeah, that's what he said on the tape.
Yeah. There was nothing that anyone should have been. They should have been adults enough to go with the flow or grown up enough. I don't know what their problem is.
Doug, do you want to
talk?
That's
basically it.
Doug,
if they can't just go along with the flow. You know, I think if they'd have gone along with the flow years ago, everyone would be friends and things would go a lot better. I don't know what they're making something out of you that you're not.
Doug, let me ask you this. You're a man who lives in his vehicle. You came to that press conference against the sleeping ban. You tried to be advisory to the Homeless Issues Task Force with your wife, Marilyn, who was on the task force. The recommendations were almost completely ignored by the Santa Cruz City Councils, whether the so-called liberals, Crone and Sugar, or the right-wingers, Fitzmaurice, Riley, and now Kennedy, who are the subsequent mayors. What's the situation for homeless people outside? Is the sleeping ban an issue?
It's a real big issue. You know, I don't mention it, but I was like almost number 47 that died last year. And
talk a little bit about that, could you?
Huh? I'm sorry, you cut out.
Tell me a little bit about that. How were you almost number 47 on the homeless death list?
Well, I caught pneumonia, and everything accelerated real quickly, living out of doors or, you know, living in the van and the way things are without really having, you know, better housing. And I just almost died. I just barely got to the hospital in time, and I was in a coma for over a month and had to learn everything all over again almost, you know.
You were in the coma, in a coma for over a month?
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, unconscious or?
I slept through all of March and part of February and April. Woke up and we were at war. We went to war while I was asleep. I kind of dreamed part of it, but that's another story.
Huh. And so now you're still living in your vehicle.
Right.
Well, some would say that the sleeping ban is not that important. Mike Rotkin says it isn't, it isn't enforced except in areas where there are problems. It's simply, a necessary tool the police have if they want to deal with bad campers. What's your answer to that?
Well, I guess they consider anyone bad that they find. It doesn't matter. It gives them an excuse for doing a lot of things, for not providing toilets and showers for people. I don't know. It is a nationwide problem. People really need to start addressing it somewhere. And if, they think they're so progressive here, that would be a big thing for them to address. All these Gandhi and Jesus followers, and I don't want to hear their shit anymore. I'm really tired of them too. So I don't know. I get pretty eerie when I think about the reality of the situation. 46 people is a lot of people to die in such a small town. And they just died out there because of the weather, the everything, because...
Now, wait a minute. Aren't
people
these...
People treat them like they hate them.
Wait a minute, Doug. Now, aren't homeless people who need to, who are mentally ill and drug and abuse drugs, and they're a bunch of drunks, and they're homeless by choice, and they're people who fundamentally need to be retrained in secretarial skills, things like that? That's the latest line we hear. And doesn't Santa Cruz provide the best social services, up and down the coast? Aren't they providing this wonderful new family shelter that they're going to have 80 beds in? Actually, there'll be beds instead of floor spaces. So what are we complaining about here?
I don't know. The normal homeless people that are here really don't understand and don't even see those types of services. It's almost like they always ship someone in from somewhere else to even partake in them. Or they'll have people that are already receiving Social Security already, get in first in the homeless services.
Well, we saw that
people
with
people that have bipolar disease and are a... drug and alcohol problem. They got like two problems. They get like double the money from the government. All a little game.
So you see, are you telling me that the $5 million homeless family center project is not going to significantly affect the homeless community here?
Not at all. Not hardly at all. I don't see how it could have any effect at all.
It's interesting. On Friday, the Nueva
Vista... homeless families at the homeless center that have been there for 10 years. So I don't know what to say about it. The same people.
Doug, I want to thank you for calling.
People grow up there.
I want to thank you for calling in. Is there anything else you want to say?
No, actually, I got sidetracked a little bit, but the main thing is, it really was, the deal of your show is it really wasn't very mild whispering that you did to me. It was a very big surprise, and I even told them during the comment period.
You were actually, Doug, the only person to speak at oral communication because it happened so much later that everybody had left at a time uncertain. We didn't know when it was going to be. I couldn't be there, of course, because I was in custody. Your speech will be coming up. I recorded it, and we'll be able to hear it shortly.
Yeah, I'm not real sure if they were going to have it or what, but I went up there and signed the list, and I just sat there and stared at it until they finally said they're going to have some.
Amazing.
Anyway, yeah.
Thank you, Doug.
I said my say, and that's about it.
Hey, come to the next one. Thomas Levitt is going to be, I guess, showing up on Tuesday after next. And this Tuesday at City Council, there is another meeting that's a special meeting for Santa Cruz advisory bodies, and I'll be talking about that.
Okay, here's Marilyn, too. She wants to say something, and
okay.
She's working on it.
Okay, Marilyn.
Hi, Robert.
Hey, Marilyn. You were on the Homeless Issues Task Force. You spent a whole year struggling with this issue.
Yeah, and it was for nothing. And it was. I guess it's never a waste of time. It probably brought some awareness up here and there, but the city council didn't do anything about anything. And so all that work was for nothing, I think. They didn't act on anything. The family thing was in the works anyway, so that was nothing new, even though it was recommended it would be done sooner than later. But I just wanted to impart one thing, that truly it does no good to talk to city council. But the main reason to go to city council and speak is to speak to the community because of that TV. That's the way to get the word out. Otherwise, when I speak with people and they tell me what they think the homeless issues are, and they're totally ignorant as to what's really going on, and they think that homeless people are out there mainly by choice, and that there really are services, they just got to go there. And all these things, they are misinformed. And so I think it's important that people go to city council. And, you know, we all know they don't listen to anybody. But the community, there are many people who watch local TV channels, and that's the way to get the word out and more of the truth known, because it isn't going to happen any other way.
It is if they don't turn off the television on you, turn off the mic and have you removed from the chambers.
Right. Yeah, that to me, I couldn't understand. He was saying this is a democratic process. Well, you don't want the community to see what really goes on when you go to city council. And to me, it was just absurd, totally absurd. But I just think I want to thank you, Robert, for putting yourself, your own neck in a sling there.
Thank you.
For everybody.
Yeah,
a lot of people appreciate what you do, and it's obvious that you're the only one. Well, there are other people. You people keeping it up there, and so people don't forget what's going on. But these deaths this last year are totally preventable.
Hey.
That's the very sad part about it, is they were preventable, and there aren't proper services for everybody. Many of those people, if they'd had a place to go.
Right. We're not even talking about giving them additional places to go necessarily, just letting them make their own places, letting them group together to help each other without being harassed by the police. That's
right.
What the camping ban and the sleeping bans are all about, is to disempower, scatter, disperse, and essentially remove homeless people.
Yeah.
Thank you for calling.
Yeah. Oh, sure. Keep it up, Robert. Thank you.
Thanks, Marilyn.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. I was also going to point out, you're tuned to Free Radio, 96.3 FM, by the way, in case you didn't know, or 101.1 FM. You may be listening to us down south. I'm Robert Norris. This is Bathrop's Piers Broadsides. The discussion, the protests around the sleeping ban, the city council's, Mayor Kennedy's disruptive behavior and repressive behavior in closing down fundamentally a protest and arresting me at council on Tuesday. Nueva Vista, the Dolphin Lee Project, the, what is it, $15, $16 million housing, so-called affordable housing project, low-income housing project, subsidized housing, actually, that replaced, that actually destroyed more units than it replaced, opened up on Friday. And the point that was made by Doug McGrath was quite appropriate, and that was that the kinds of people that are getting into this thing do not really make a real dent in the original population, and the people that were evicted, the Hispanic community that was destroyed by the Fitzmaurice Byers Rotkin Kennedy scheme, the Dolphin Lee project, and which opened up, had only a fraction of the original families and the original the single men who were there. They in essence uprooted an entire Hispanic community at the cost of affordable housing for the next 15 years in the Dolphin Lee project, now called the Nueva Vista project, which opened up on Friday. And I'd hope to have more tape on that, but I guess I was a little tired after all the stuff earlier. And it's really kind of grueling, folks, to go walking into these lions' dens where you're likely to get this kind of unjustified, illegal, unconstitutional, and abusive behavior from authority figures who have the power to order the police around, and do. Kennedy has shown he has no compunctions at all about putting a lot of people on notice that he's prepared to use police force to remove the right to appear before city council, silently even, waiting for oral communication. That's what he did on Tuesday. And it's a dangerous situation for a lot of people on a lot of issues, but certainly it has significant impact on homeless people, and it has nothing to do with disruption, except that it shows that the city council will bend over for disruption by the mayor, even when nothing is happening in the audience could be reasonably described as disruptive by anybody. If Mayor Kennedy and Vice Mayor Rotkin decide they want to term something disruptive, they apparently have extensive latitude to do so. And when he attempts to use the decorum rules to come back and say, hey, I have a right to appeal this to the city council generally, they'll turn off your mic. If they did what Kennedy did on Tuesday, they'll say, turn off the TV, and they will remove you from the chambers, and then they'll have you arrested. This is Santa Cruz, folks. This is 2004, and it's important we know where we are. Let's hear a little more of the conclusion of this tape.
Long-awaited oral communications period finally came up, but the population of people who'd come to speak, not knowing when it was going to come, and rather disconcerted by all the democracy that Mayor Kennedy was facilitating, were gone except for one speaker. And the final speaker was Doug McGrath, the man who I was given my second warning for whispering an advisory to that he was wanted outside.
Regular agenda of the redevelopment committee is a joint city council and redevelopment agency oral communications. This is the chance for the public to speak on any item that's not on our agenda. We'll take 30 minutes, which will run till 6:15. We'd ask you to keep your comments to 3 minutes if possible. Thank you.
I'd like to apologize to maybe being part of the disruption early. Mr. Norris wanted to notify me that a reporter outside wanted to speak to me. And I'm disabled and I can't walk around that much. But it seemed selective to me because the gentleman in front of me had been spoken to on the side, just like he spoke to me several times. In fact, a man had just left. So, but I apologize if you consider I was part of
it. We appreciate it. And we welcome your participation. Thank you.
And the last speaker was Ed Davidson, and I believe he had nothing to say about or any concerns about what the council had done. And it has to be said that no one came down from the television audience to protest at oral communications or to speak. Perhaps people didn't even know that it had happened. Most people assume oral communications is 7 o'clock in the evening. And that was the council meeting of January 13th, 2004.
And for those of you who want to rehear that, who somehow feel that perhaps there was some justification for Mayor Kennedy's bizarre, arbitrary, and autocratic decision to harass people, that's what it amounted to, interrupt city council speakers and harass people from his position on the chair in rather clear violation of not just the First Amendment, but the Brown Act right to be present at a public meeting, can go to the library and listen to this tape. I'm also going to try to have it posted on the internet at www.santacruz.indymedia.org. We have a caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, Robert, DJ Matter Embryo again. Just real quick,
sure,
I thought that was interesting, that last part of that, because it was disingenuous because the man basically, unless I'm misunderstanding, he very directly told Kennedy that that it was appropriate, the message that you were giving him.
Right, and it was whispered, you know. I mean,
Yes, and it seemed to be like just a favor. I can't even remember the exact content, but, you know, it seemed like just a favor of you telling somebody something that they needed to know.
Sure.
And he kind of brought that in front of Kennedy, and he slickly kind of deflected it in the sense of, we value your participation, thank you.
Right, and if you look at Kennedy's letter, and I can actually read Kennedy's letter, I will do that now, that he sent his subsequent email. It's a little bit confusing.
Okay, well, look, I'll go and let you do that.
All righty.
Okay, great.
This is, here is an email that Kennedy sent to me. It's dated 17th of January, that's yesterday, from R. Scott Kennedy to Robert Norris, Thomas Levitt, with copies to Dan White, Ken McLaughlin. Dan White's a Sentinel writer. Ken McLaughlin writes for the Mercury News. Laurel Chesky of the Good Times, Sarah Phelan of the Metro. And also it states, to Lydia Blanchard, Becky Johnson, Robert Norris, Michael Smith, who's a Peace and Freedom Party activist himself, and Joe Williams, a Peace and Freedom Party candidate. And here's what it says. Dear Lydia, Becky, Robert, Michael, and Joe, although I guess Steve Argy was referred to in the spoken part of Kennedy's speech, but this letter doesn't mention him. I read the guidelines for decorum at city council meetings during the January 13, 2004 afternoon session. Unfortunately, later in the afternoon during oral communications, when responding to a question from Lydia Blanchard, I incorrectly described the consequence of receiving a third warning about disrupting city council meetings. Now, I saw no such record of any kind of oral communication with Lydia Blanchard, so perhaps he meant talking to her afterward. Kennedy continues, I apologize for any confusion caused and for the understandable concern that my incorrect statement evoked. He doesn't say what the incorrect statement is, but Kennedy continues, those who are issued a third warning to not disrupt council meetings are asked to remove themselves from that meeting. If they refuse, they may be removed from that meeting. Anyone receiving a third warning is not barred from participating in the next or subsequent council meetings. They are, of course, welcome to participate in future meetings. However, any person who has received two or more warnings during previous meetings will be asked to leave after a third or additional warning. Any person receiving a third warning or has previously received a third warning will be asked to leave the meeting. I will not begin again with a first warning. They are welcome to return and participate in future meetings. I was wrong in my statement to Lydia. I apologize for incorrectly stating the consequences of a third warning. I am sending this email to those for whom I have email addresses because I want to clarify as soon as possible what the policy is. A copy of the council guidelines for meeting decorum is pasted in below. I'll also send a letter with my apology and a copy of the guidelines to each of you and to Steve Argue, Bernard Klitzner, and John Teelking. We can locate USPS addresses for them. Please feel free to contact me if you have any questions. Scott Kennedy, Mayor, and with copies to all the news media. And then he gives the guidelines, the decorum guidelines. Just for those who are interested, here's some of what the decorum guidelines are. You've heard them already, but I'll give you some of the particular guidelines. While the council is in session, all persons shall preserve order and decorum. Any person making personal, impertinent, or slanderous remarks, or becoming boisterous or otherwise disrupting the council meeting shall be barred by the presiding officer from further attendance at said meeting unless permission for continued attendance is granted by a majority vote of the council. Now, of course, I asked for a majority vote. Kennedy shut off the mic and had me removed. He refused to allow that, and to their discredit, not one member of that city council objected to this procedure. It's, to me, this is really a process of, we have to re-educate ourselves to find a way to effectively, persistently, and in a timely fashion resist inappropriate authority arbitrarily and abusively exercised. And sometimes resist authority to the extent that we provide for an opening space and a dialogue and a sense that it's okay to say, hold it, let's talk about this before we do it, if we're not in the middle of a war zone. And there was no war zone at City Council. But, of course, the entire country is being treated like a war zone. And apparently Kennedy has decided to declare war on the local protesters and also on people who are his critics, who he simply uses these, well, he's using whatever occasion he wants as an opportunity to remove them. At least he seemed to be doing that on Tuesday. So there are two kind of interwoven issues here. One is the issue of the homeless issue, which, you know, is the key issue we were there for. The other is the broader issue of abuse of power, which was so really evidently manifested. And Perhaps we've carried this one as far as we can go at the moment, but you're always welcome to call in to talk more about it, 427-3772. There is a meeting of the Santa Cruz City Council on January 20th, day after tomorrow, Tuesday. This, however, will have no oral communications period. It's one of the so-called special meetings they hold on third and first Tuesdays. This is for invitations to apply to the City of Santa Cruz advisory bodies. But if somebody wants to go and speak at the council and apply to the body to be on that board, this can be an occasion for you to make a speech to the council about what happened on Tuesday night if it relates to your credentials to be on the body. And the bodies that are available, and again, we're not talking about talking to the city council. We're talking about talking to the community. And I believe these sessions are taped and broadcast live. I could be wrong, but I think these are still broadcast. But I'd have to find out about that. Maybe my producer knows. The bodies that are available for that have vacancies that you can apply to are the Arts Commission, the Board of Buildings Appeals, the Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women, the Downtown Commission, the Historic Preservation Commission, the Living Wage Advisory Committee, Parks and Recreation Commission, Planning Commission, Public Art Committee, Public Works Commission, Santa Cruz City Transportation Commission, Sister Cities Committee, and Water Commission. It seems to me what you have to do simply is talk about your credentials. And if you want, bring in the issue of how you feel city council meetings should be conducted insofar as it relates to the subject matter of your commission and your concern about that. And that sounds like a stretch. Again, there are probably much better places to raise these issues, and hopefully we're going to find better forums, because the council, obviously, is a very difficult forum. It seems to be almost now equally as difficult as courts. And on the court situation, let me kind of shift gears here. I'm going to talk a little bit about that in a moment. Talk about upcoming court cases. I went to court on Friday on the issue of amplified sound, my playing a video about police abuse against protesters and homeless people on the mall, for which I was ticketed, and they essentially closed it down under Sergeant Baker way back in the middle of last summer because we were playing a video of how the police treat people in front of the Pacific Trading Company, the store that put in the sit-down on the planter prohibition and moved the fence at a cost of, what, $7,000 to $12,000 of your money as given to them by the police department, given to secretly done behind everyone's back. And that case came up in court, and I'm going to be going through that. But first, let's hear a little of this. So I took a picture of Mike Rodkin stopping a vehicle as he jaywalked across the street in front of over to the coffee roasting company, and I chatted with him about that afterward. He confided to me, I think I may have mentioned this on the show or an earlier show, that he had in fact gotten a citation for jaywalking in the past, and he went to court and paid it. But he didn't get a citation this day, and most people don't get citations, and it's completely inappropriate to give citations for this. On Pacific Avenue, unless you're actually causing a car to come to a screeching halt and you're acting in a fashion that's really outrageous and bizarre. Something interesting happened to me in court the other day when I went in to... I mentioned that I'm seeking a pitches motion on the Baker amplified sound case, get a sound permit or go to jail, you know, if you want to play a television on the sidewalk, even though that's never been the case in the past for anybody else. And that case has been postponed 6 weeks. But as I was there, I talked to a highway patrol officer who advised me that he himself has fought speeding tickets, I guess, in his civilian life when he got a ticket from another jurisdiction up in Sacramento for speeding. And he learned that you can effectively fight a lot of speeding tickets, that the speeding limits, for example, 25 miles per hour, 35 miles per hour, and so forth, are not absolute limits. You can go over those speed limits provided you can show it's safe and reasonable to do so. There are some absolute limits. The 55, 60, and 65 apparently are absolute limits, but you have to know the technicalities of these things. So for all of you free and easy automobile drivers out there or fast bicyclists, keep that in mind. You don't automatically get found guilty but you have to go into court and check the book, fight your ticket on all these issues. And for anybody going to court, whether it's for sitting on the sidewalk within 14 feet of a building or playing a guitar with an open display case within 10 feet of a building, or just because Officer Pam Bechtel just decides she's going to give you a ticket, or perhaps Sergeant Flippo decides to give you a ticket for fortune-telling on the street, as he did within the last month to Jason Pascal, the Reverend Doctor, as he calls himself, the African-American fellow who was...
seriously harassed out of town by Sergeant Baker a year ago, but is back and can be found near the Cooper House area, telling reading cards. You've got to get the law. You need to go to the basement of the county building and get a copy of the law under which you're charged and start reading it carefully, looking at precedents. And, of course, most people just don't want to bother with this. Don't try to use common sense. The law does not really, not too related to common sense. You got to look at the technical specifics of the law and how the law has been treated in the past. And if you're talking about saving time, saving money, it may not save you time, but it may save you money in the end. Remember to disqualify the referee in the basement. I'm beginning to get bad reports of, I guess it's Kim Baskett. I may have that name slightly wrong. She was the county council. She's the replacement for referee Meat Grinder Mulligan, John Mulligan, the guy who loves to turn out fines with an amiable smile for the city and the county, but pays no attention to basic human rights or even basic court rights in terms of your right to a jury trial if you're being charged with a misdemeanor, of your right to be able to make an audio recording of a proceeding unless there's some reason to object to it. All these things you need to know about if you are going to get involved in this kind of political activism, or even if you're just a casual citizen who's fighting this kind of stuff and you get caught up in the toil of these nets and that sort of thing. In the rather wide-ranging net that the police tend to be throwing out, it can happen to anybody. Perhaps more of us should be getting caught up in that net in some way, and then maybe the net will rip. But I don't really advise people necessarily to get arrested, and I didn't particularly want to get arrested myself on Tuesday. I just felt there was no way I was going to abandon my right to speak at oral communications because Kennedy decided that I had no right to be there because he didn't want me there. I thought that would set a very bad precedent, and I'm not unhappy that I did it. Let's hear a little from the streets. Enough from me, although you'll be hearing more from me too. Call in if you want, 427-3772. And remember, there is a meal going on right now at the, I believe last week it wasn't going on, but I think this week it is, at the Loudoun Nelson Center, and that is where the Potter's Hand serves a tasty breakfast. It starts at 11. I think it's still going on. Check it out till maybe 1 or 1:30. They aren't serving on the streets anymore. They were intimidated away from it by the Downtown Association and the police. But I understand Food Not Bombs is still serving, or at least I hope it is. And if Food Not Bombers want to call in with a report, I'd be happy to hear that.
Well, so it's about 8:25 on January 8th, 2004. We're in front of Irish Pub, and here's a man with a guitar sitting on a park bench, I should say, sidewalk bench, illegally. You cannot perform on a bench, sir. You should know better. And you also have a display device with money on it. Oh, that's just shocking.
We feel shy. I was still loving you. Now why shouldn't I be able to sing that here to the people that enjoy it? And if the mountains crumble too sweet, oh my, you'd be here with me. Inspiration is what you are to me. Inspiration, girl, I'll see.
Bill, you're looking to put on a concert.
We're going to put on a concert. I'm looking at the target dates, April 20th, Saturday. I think it's the 20th, I believe so. That's the target date because I have a lot to talk to public authorities and whatnot and, you know, parks and recreation. But it's going to be a peaceful, free concert. And I think I think there's enough good street musicians on this street right here on Pacific Avenue where I'm sitting.
Excessive noise.
He needs a muffler. But I think that there's enough talent out. In fact, I know there is. I've been playing for 36 years.
So we're nearing 10 o'clock at night in front of Borders, temperate evening on Thursday, January 15th, and we're talking with Chris Kittle. And Chris, you have a court date coming up, February 4th. What's going to happen then?
Well, I was ticketed for some, what do you call those But it was for camping and for another charge. And
how long ago was this?
This was during the summer months of last year.
And so have you been to trial yet? Or have you,
I went for a first case for the sleeping, I think it was near the public library.
Right.
And got out to a plan for $40 a month.
Right.
All right. Well,
what was your total fine on
that? Total fine on that was, about 320. About 320.
320? How many tickets?
For just the one, for the sleeping ticket.
One sleeping ticket cost you $320?
It wasn't at the library. It was right there by the Mission School up there on the hill.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and they said because it was a state park. The actual ticket, it wasn't a camping ticket. It said for being in the park after hours.
And they charged you $320.
Oh, yeah, but that was because they had to bring it down from $460.
Who was the judge on this case? Commissioner Joseph, Commissioner Siegel, Mulligan in the basement.
Mulligan in the basement, yeah.
And he granted Mulligan.
Yeah, the $40 payments a week. The first week I lost my guitar, so I lost my
ability to pay.
Right. And then I ended up having a free trip up to San Francisco to work on music, so I kind of took that. And so there were simple reasons why I didn't show up, but they were all, you know. So what happens is I'm over here at a parking lot, right? Over here by the restroom over here off of River Street. Okay, the cop comes over and we're just standing there staying out of the rain. And he comes over and he starts IDing everybody. Okay. So he gets to me and he's like, checks it over and finds out that I've got a bunch of tickets, right? But that since I had been gone for about 5 months, it was okay to OR me.
That's a strange thing. Why would it be okay? Anyway, yes.
Okay. Well, so they went ahead and they wrote me out all the tickets on one ticket.
How many tickets were there?
There was three with prices on them.
These were camping, possession of marijuana.
Yeah, there was three camping, one possession of less than an ounce, and then the failure to pay.
Okay. And any other court date coming up on?
On the 4th of February.
In the basement again?
Yeah, it's in the basement. Now, catch this. With all three tickets together, it says that I owe about $1,000.
Huh. That's a lot of community service or time and care.
For trying to sleep. You know, I found a nice little spot. I wasn't, you know, in view of anybody. I was trying to keep it moderate, you know, not trying to be, you know, flagrant about it. And for three tickets and the possession of less than an ounce, bingo, you know. And this is, all these tickets took place within an 8-month period.
Now, what about tonight? Are you sleeping out?
Yeah, I'm sleeping out.
And should I tell the police officer where you're sleeping so you can get another ticket, maybe kind of go for a record?
Well, no, because, see, this was last year. This was between January and August of last year. So I don't want to start another trend, you know.
I see. So you want to take care of last year before you do this year?
Well, of course. And I would also like to let people, because I'm needing information on what the best way for me to pursue this is. I mean, should I get a small attorney or what? Maybe you have some suggestions.
Yeah, sure. No, I was being whimsical because, you know, it sounded so absurd, the whole thing. But it's not absurd to you. It's a real situation. These are infractions. What that unfortunately means is you're not entitled to a public defender or a jury trial. In fact, you have already been convicted. So now we've got the question of a failure to pay. I suppose you could ask for a trial on a failure to pay. Now, actually, do you have much in the way of possessions?
Right now, no. Mainly it's just musical equipment and maybe some CDs.
What you can do is he can offer you community service, and you can say, this is a defense which may or may not work. It's worked in some cases, and in others it's not. You can say, I do not want community service. I am unable to pay. And my understanding of this is you cannot be jailed for an infraction. There is a misdemeanor that's failure to pay a vehicular ticket, but not a camping van ticket, which is a municipal code ticket. However, the stumbling block here is that you also have a ticket for possession of less than an ounce of marijuana, which is a misdemeanor, I believe. So it's possible they may be able to prosecute you for failure to pay the marijuana ticket.
That never went to court yet. That hasn't gone to court yet.
And that you're not been charged unless you've pled guilty to it.
No, they just rewrote the tickets for the new date.
I see. Well, I would plead not guilty on the charges
not guilty on the marijuana ticket and demand a jury trial.
Right.
They don't like that at all.
Okay.
But in which case, they're going to be nice to you, so you have to be aware that there's always that prospect.
Uh-huh.
And how many of these charges have been convicted on?
Just one that was the guilty, which was the first camp spot over there by Mission Street.
And that's when you got the $300-plus ticket for this. Now, how is it up to $1,000 if you haven't been found guilty on the other ticket?
Well, there must be adding up all the costs of the other tickets. I mean,
it's the potential bail costs.
Yeah, there you go. Okay.
Well, I would say, you know, going to court and ask for, say, you were not clear. You understand you have been tried on one of these cases, but in the others you haven't. You would like an opportunity to defend yourself on all three. You need to be able to read the laws involved and understand exactly what the charges are. And it wasn't clear to you from the warrant.
In fact, one of the charges, he looked at it and said, I have no idea what that one is, but, you know, it was on the top ticket.
This is suggestions for a person who is not trained as an attorney, and I'm simply the character of the streets. And, you also, I suggest you go to the law library and sort of poke around down there, get the code section which contains each of your laws, make a copy of the law, so that you know what you're actually charged with.
There you go.
Not that it's going to make a dime's worth of difference, mind you, in some respects, but in other respects, you at least know that. You can actually begin to talk about it and research it. Not that you necessarily spend time researching it, but have you had interest, you could.
I do research anyways on music, so.
Any of it going on the streets out here that we should know about?
Yeah, he's got this gentleman officer that came up earlier today, and he was doing a kind of intimidation thing. Like, there was this one gentleman that had a pole, and had a little piece of metal on the bottom, because he was kind of using it as a cane of some sort. Pretty tall cane, though. And so he went up to him, and just because he had that possession, he asked for the ID, everything. And then
the guy can't give him the ID?
Yeah, the guy didn't have an ID, but they ran got the information through their communicator.
He charged him with a crime for having a pole?
No, in fact, he got the pole back. And the other one was that the cop goes, well, if you guys are looking for, you guys are trying to get my attention, well, now you got it. And, you know.
Who is this cop?
It starts with a C.
Is he new on the avenue? Is he young? Is he old? Is he white? Is he Hispanic?
I would say mid-20s Hispanic. He's kind of got the
If it catches me, let me know. And we'll stop it here in the Borders area?
Yeah, right here in front of the actual cafe.
Fine. You notice the bench is kind of empty now, even though it's a temperate evening. Has the scene kind of migrated, or are we just here at a low point?
I would say that right now we're at a major low point. Creativity right now on the street is just kind of really shot down. It wasn't a good year for a lot of us, so we're kind of trying to figure out a new way to present our shows, you know, our acts. So I figure probably by next week, because I get a guitar from a nice church group down here on Friday. They do some coffee services down here. I think people should check them out.
Is the Potter's Hand back, by the way, Dennis Adams, or not?
On Sundays. Not during the afternoons, but we are doing the Sundays.
Is that doing Sunday indoors or outdoors?
Sunday indoor. Didn't do it this last week because there was also this major affair going on about fungus. So they didn't do it during the last Sunday, but it should be back up and running this Sunday.
They haven't been outdoors for months, right?
No, I didn't get back until Christmas night.
Right. Okay. We've been talking with
Chris.
Thank you, Chris.
No problem.
Okay, the Red Church, I guess that's Calvary Episcopal across from what is often the farmer's market on Wednesday.
Yeah. Yeah, there's been some
churches packed. People sleeping around the church outside? Or?
Yeah, there's been people sleeping around the church because these last few days have been raining so bad and all that. And
how
so people are sleeping.
How many people would you say were there tonight or there last night? Let's say.
I'd say a good 20, 25.
And the police weren't bothering them?
No. In fact, the church... See, the church allows it, but for some reason, the police like to do a little sweep thing. Usually the church, as long as the people get up, you know, when they're asked to leave, have no problem with it. It's the local police that have a tendency to, at 6 o'clock, they do that, where they just raid everything. It's just absolutely amazing. But yeah, 6 o'clock, man, it's almost, if you go, you could go cop cars. holler if I sit there.
So you slept there last night?
Yeah, I slept there last night.
Did they wake you?
The church didn't wake us up until about 7:30.
And the police didn't come either?
No, the police were no problem last night.
Yeah. And how many nights have you slept there?
Off and on. Tonight would have been the second.
Okay. Mostly you've been sleeping elsewhere, though, since December when you got back.
Say that again?
Mostly elsewhere since you got back in December.
Yeah. Staying over there back by Bookshop Santa Cruz a few times, you know. Not anywhere where I got busted last time.
I don't want necessarily to have you necessarily feel like you have to say everywhere you slept, although you've given me some great ideas should I be reduced to a state of sleeping outside.
Oh, yeah. The trick on that is just to go ahead and either just don't cause any scenes. You know, loud noise is what attracts them. If you don't have the loud noise, then the only reason they have to bother you is just because they may be looking for someone, you know, which I don't even think that's really suspicion for aliases. I don't think that's a crime. So, should really be no problem.
How are the hosts and the paminator treating people?
Not too bad. I think they got really happy about the results from first night.
I think they'd be happy about first night.
Well, there was a lot of money going to the businesses, but yet the people who were trying to get help for themselves, it was just not. I mean, it was like everybody was cheap. When the clock tower time hit, everybody just started walking down the road like they were sheep heading for the slaughter.
A lot of police out that night.
Yeah, and rows of five. There's a row of five patrolling all night up and down.
I saw actually seven deputies down here in one clump. Again, thank you, Chris, for the update, and keep me advised, and let us know within a week or two when your court date comes up. It's, again, for those who don't remember, Baker Square, 1107 Ocean Street, Wednesday morning at 8:30. So I'm a little early, but get down there if you can.
Hey, no problem. That sounds fun.
Thank you.
Okay.
Rusty Rag.
speaking with that notorious court prowler and flautist, Moo.
Right. Let me explain. I thought I was actually in a pre-trial hearing in which I would be allowed to cross-examine the witness, who, Officer Pam Bechtel,
the Paminator.
Pam, I saw it inside the courtroom, and she said no deals, and so I knew that it was going to be an open court kind of thing. I was charged with first being within 10 feet of the window. I corrected her on that citation number, and it was later changed to the correct playing within 10 feet of a building.
You were playing a criminal flute within 10 feet of a...
I was maliciously flouting for cash on the streets. So, that
corner by where we're actually standing was near the Cooper House area, the gelato, whatever it's called, the oxygen room.
And then, as the trial proceeded, I became more emotional because the previous trial had been a criminal trial, 2 years old, about these Texas thugs that killed the one-armed philosopher around town, Michael Blandon, who I barely knew, but I knew him, and I thought he was a nice enough guy. But anyway, he was killed by these Texas thugs that came in and wanted to use his skull for a candle holder.
Well, there's a reason. Serious reason.
I mean, stay off metal, kids.
Youth for the homeless.
Stay off metal, I want to tell you. But anyway, so back to the main event. I lost badly in court because I was judged to be flouting within 10 foot of a building, and the moment I said the defense rests, I was judged guilty and sentenced to 40 hours of community service to be served sometime during the spring and summer, which is quite lenient. And I always thank the judge because it had been a six-hour day.
Basket of
No, this was Judge His Honor Michael Barton. E. Barton, who I thought was quite distinguished on the bench, and almost a fair judge. However, I didn't think he understood the severity of these restrictions.
You qualified the referee.
Previously disqualified that. And I actually thought we were still going to go to trial, so it was kind of basically my misunderstanding. My law school education is about 20 years out of date, so hey, I'm
you
not...
You've come to the Huff meeting, and you've been evading the SAFE meetings. This is a lesson for us all, folks. Here's the man, the sad victim of our judicial system, because he did not seek the help he needed from the Society for the Artistic Freedom and Expression and or Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom.
Let me amend that for a moment. Robert's hallucinating again, the megalomania of the local political scene takes over whenever he's like roaming the streets late at night.
You're off on a pretrial, you kook.
A kook, I call, hey, words of the kook. Ignorance of procedural,
you
legal proceedings in which I, as a client, was once again proving I should have stayed home.
Well, anyway,
enough of this. Robert, let's go for sushi or something.
Ah, indeed. Well, so you have you been flouting tonight and flouting the law? No. He's given me the sign that that is the interview is terminated for the evening, folks. But so goeth the case with Moo. We'll talk more later. And here Moo is doing a little after-hours playing within 10 feet of a building.
After curfew.
After 10 p.m.? Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression does meet every Wednesday night. That's the Street Performers Union at Baker's Square for those who are interested. So check that out. You're tuned to Free Radio 96.3 FM. I'm Robert Norse. We have about half an hour left in the show. If you want to get in touch, 427-3772 is the number to call. So give a call and we'll do it.
get these tapes working. Sometimes they seem a little screwy, so get things together and we'll proceed. And
any building that is has human occupants, so Moo is being very sensitive to the needs of the residential community here.
So street interviews are kind of the heart of this show, and I'm often playing you the raw tape, so my apologies if some of it seems a little crusty. I think it's important and interesting stuff. And let's take a traditional musical break. That, of course, was Just Kidding from a decade ago, advising direct action to awaken the mayor to his responsibilities. Hi, you're on Free Radio. What's cooking? Hello? Hello, can you hear me? I think you're on Free Radio. You should be. Can you hear me? Try that again. Try calling back, caller. I'm not sure why that didn't work. Let's see how we're doing here. Yeah, we have a phone line that's working. Okay, I'll wait for that return call again. Here we go. Hi, you're on Free Radio?
Can you hear me now?
I can.
Excellent. Thanks so much.
Sure.
Just want to give a heads up on a free community meeting on the issue about chemtrails.
Okay.
You may have heard of it. You may believe in it. You may think it's a hoax. Whatever, you're invited.
Well, thank
It'll
you.
Be tomorrow, Monday, Martin Luther King Day, mm-hmm. from 2 to 5 p.m. at the Santa Cruz Vets Hall. It's free. It's going to be a packed house. It's going to be a lot of fun, and hope to see you there.
Okay, well, let's make sure that if you invite Mayor Kennedy, make sure that you warn him before evicting him.
I'm sorry?
Just a joke.
Well, warn him.
2 to 5 chemtrails tomorrow at the Vets Hall.
2 to 5 chemtrails meeting tomorrow at the Vets Hall.
Downtown Santa Cruz. You got a phone number for more information?
More information, go to our website, which is www.chemtrails911.com. And our motto is look up, wake up, and speak out.
Hey, thank you.
Awesome, thanks.
Bye-bye.
I'm talking to a Bible reader here on, it's in front of Uptown Jeans. You have a sign, disabled homeless need help, please, and a McDonald's cup. What does this mean?
Help, Mr. Wizard.
In other words, you are seeking assistance from the local community.
Which I'm not getting.
And, of course, it is about 1:30 on the 16th of January. Are Friday going to rain?
No, not until Sunday.
Now, what have you observed out here? I see there seems to be a guitarist, I guess they're legal, and a flautist, two guitarists and a flautist. No hassles, no problems?
And we interrupt the taped version to get the live version. We're talking with...
Scott.
Hey, Scott, what's up?
I was just calling about this whole Scott Kennedy thing, and...
Hey, what do you think about these vicious attacks on our mayor?
Well, the one thing is, I remember when he was running for city council this last time, a well-known flyer producer in town kept on promising to put out an anti-Kennedy flyer to be distributed on campus and around town. And that flyer wasn't produced until the last day of the day of the election. And so it got very little distribution.
And the
same thing happened when Mike Rockin ran again 2 years ago. The same flyer producer kept on promising an anti-Rockin flyer, and it came out like a day before the election.
Do you think that this guy is actually in the pay of Rotkin and Kennedy? What's going on?
I'm not understanding why this person is condemning these two individuals when he kept on promising to help fight against their election and then sat on his hands and didn't do it.
Hmm. You are, of course, referring to that notorious Huff activist Robert North.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to say that. I figured it was up to you to say that.
Well, I'm sensitive to your criticism. I don't know if your chronology is exactly correct, but you are, I think, substantially right that the flyers against the Kennedy and Rotkin re-elections, although there are a couple of good ones that came out in 1998 on time, I think. But the one in 2000 and the one in 2002, we were not as prompt with, and your criticism is definitely appropriate. But, of course, we could have had you in the studio helping design and pass on the flyer, but I don't recall you there.
What studio is this?
Our
production studio?
The multi-million dollar production studio right next to the new Nueva Vista Apartments, which, by the way, have you been down there to see the opening on Friday?
No,
I wasn't either. I thought somebody perhaps might have been. Well, Scott, I didn't see you at the city council sleeping ban protest. Does this mean you think the issue is no longer worthy of your attendance at these affairs? Or?
I was busy that afternoon, so I wasn't able to attend. Although where I was able to see it on TV, and I concur that from what was visible on TV, the broadcast of the city council meeting, neither the protesters nor yourself disrupted the meeting. It was either Scott Kennedy or Mike Rockin that continually disrupted the meeting on your behalf.
So you think that they were paid agents of Norse moving in to simply effectuate my sinister agenda?
Well, I don't know if you've got some reciprocal agreement with them that if you win a substantial lawsuit against the city that you'll share that part of it with them or what.
Well, I try to be generous in my winning. Of course, we're being very facetious here. For those who don't know, Scott and I are joking about this. You share my impression, I guess, of what happened. I mean, it is really, that's why I was kind of baffled by Bob LaMonica's call. But he often has a different point of view, and folks, have their own perspectives. What should people do about this, or is there anything to be done about this abuse of authority by the city council mayor and vice mayor?
Well, I mean, one option is a recall. The other option is to produce flyers in advance of the election and get them out there in wide distribution to allow people, you know, especially at campus, where these two guys, these two goons, are considered some sort of gods. You know, I mean, they tout themselves as being progressives, and actually they're fascist. You know, I mean. They have this whole repressive regime that they not only foist upon people at the city council chambers, but all over town with the basically open hand that they're giving to the police department to deal with so-called problems.
Well, I know that you used to spend a significant amount of time at city council regularly talking to them, and then there was, a period when you were optimistic when Fitzmaurice, Crone, and Sugar won the election in 98. But since then, I guess you've not been spending a lot of time down there. Is it worthwhile to go to city council meetings? I mean, I frankly, when I heard that people wanted to do a protest at City Hall in January, I was not terribly enthusiastic about the idea, but on short notice, the One Dance Summit was just coming to town. We couldn't think of something else that would be that maybe 30 or 40 people from the summit would be willing to do, so we agreed to do that. But what way can the community be effectively approached on these issues? It doesn't seem that going to council meetings makes a lot of difference. Even when the De Anza people go to council meetings, they get screwed. And even when they put in their referendum, I should say their initiative, I guess it was referendum, they get sold out by their own leaders when they had the actual chance to really fundamentally change city council policy. What's our next step, my leader?
Well, like I said, I think a recall is really the most effective tool we have at the moment. I mean, you know, I don't know what the climate would be like here in Santa Cruz for initiating a recall, but I know I talked to somebody that was at that meeting the other night that had never been in a city council meeting before, and they were just basically there as an observer because they heard there was going to be a protest, so they decided, you know, they are homeless, they live in their vehicle, and they could not believe the way that Scott Kennedy and Mike Rockin acted. They just could not believe it, that they were appalled by their actions. And I think that anybody that doesn't go to city council meetings and only sees what's going on TV, or even if they're not watching TV, just, you know, gets their information from the Sentinel or whatnot, doesn't realize what megalomaniacs these guys are. And it's got to stop. I mean, we got to get rid of these people, and we got to somehow come up with a way that they can never get back in power again. They're out of control, you know. It's like having Mussolini and Hitler run our town.
Well, surely people are not getting beaten with blackjacks at city council. I was maybe been thrown into jail, but I was released 4 hours later. Charges will probably be dropped. There are those who say that calling this a fascist state, calling these guys fascists, is a form of overkill, that, you know, while we may be suffering from George Bush, we can still always rely on our fine Democratic Party primaries to provide us with meaningful alternatives.
Well, I mean, they call themselves progressives, liberals, whatever they want to call themselves. You know, Rockin calls himself a socialist,
feminist,
you know. It's like, I've never seen Rockin do anything to help women's causes. As a matter of fact, you know, he has repeatedly allowed the police department to withhold cases that should be going to the Commission for Prevention of Violence Against Women from going there, because they're allowing the police department to reclassify this information, and so it never goes to the appropriate department, you know, the appropriate commission to be reviewed.
And indeed, that commission did recommend to City Council, and I believe Rotkin was on the City Council at the time when it was recommended, that the sleeping ban be lifted specifically in the interests of poor and homeless women, because women cannot sleep in well-lighted areas, they cannot gather in groups, and they cannot use the police force, were the three main reasons that they expressed their concerns, as I remember. But this was completely ignored by Rotkin.
Of course.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, if these people are going to call themselves, you know, liberals, I mean, Scott Kennedy, you know, is the leader of the so-called Resource Center for Nonviolence, and that man has such a violent personality, and he's such a megalomaniac that, I mean, the only thing you can say is that they're fascists. I mean, maybe it's over the top calling them fascists, but I don't know what other word you can use to describe their behavior.
Well, the process that city council mayors have been using for the last 5 years has smacked of fascist police state tactics. Mayor Sugar used it in the arrest of James Ney and David Silva.
Right, yeah. I mean,
you know,
the last good mayor we had was Celia Scott. And you know, then after her, we had Catherine Byers, and you know, to her credit, Catherine Byers never interrupted anybody that I know. You know, even you, she let you continue on with your antics, your so-called antics in city council, and never interrupted you. And as far as I can remember, and you know, that's to her credit. And ever since then, every mayor we've had, I mean, even Christopher Crone, was continually being pressured by Tim Fitzmaurice to, you know, Tim Fitzmaurice was interrupting meetings to get Christopher to do things like arrest you for your so-called Nazi salute and all that kind of stuff, you know, because it was Tim that interrupted that meeting by, you know,
we've had this going on for years, and I don't know. That's why I wonder, is it the temper of the times? Is it the corruption of the position involved? Is it the lassitude of the citizenry? What accounts for this?
Well, I think a lot of it is that these guys, by and large, much of what they do there at city council happens in a vacuum. There's nobody there, you know. There's no groups of people showing up and saying, you know, do this, do that. You know, no one's coming at them on the issues of the, you know, whatever's on their agenda. It's usually, you know, a handful of people, yourself, Ed Davidson, and maybe myself, and a few other people that show up at these meetings on a regular basis, and so that they can ignore us and marginalize us. And then, you know, when there are large crowds of people that show up, say, for the De Anza thing, they can just, you know, throw up this whole, oh, we're in a budget crisis, we can't afford this, well, you know, woe is me type attitude. But, you know, by and large, I think it's just that they're operating in a vacuum where there is no citizen input. And, you know, if these council meetings were full of people, I don't care what side people take, but if there was, you know, 100 people wanting to talk on every agenda item.
Yeah, I hear you.
It would really change the dynamics of the situation.
The problem, of course,
but the apathy.